And the weather today, we have a delightful 21 degrees centigrade as the high, a low of 15 degrees centigrade, and the morning brightness will descend into some patchy rain by lunchtime with some showers, but then sunny spells will return by the afternoon.
Glinton has now officially been put on the broadcasting map, with Tessa Snart taking midweek drivette duties to a whole new level.
So inevitably, Tessa, what is the weather like in Costa Brava?
Oh, sunny and warm, 30 degrees.
Oh, right, OK. Well, it's only...
it's a different kind of heat, isn't it?
Exactly, only 9 degrees ahead of Lincoln, and it just works through that. So yourself, there's Lois, there's Mum and Dad, Annie and Dave. Yeah. Exactly, just the snarts have landed, which is fantastic stuff there. And I'm sure the Spanish population are duly delighted to actually have you on board from that point of view. Just one thing, Tessa, try and avoid coming back with one of those stuffed donkeys. It just doesn't quite... I know you might be tempted.
No.
You might be tempted to get a companion for the badger in the studio thing. Yeah, that's what the badger needs a stuffed donkey. Maybe you just have to hold back on that.
I might just have to.
Well, there you go. Absolutely. Uzo Ehiogu, who is an ex-commando, will be talking about back pain and how back pain is one of the most challenging things we're actually faced with in terms of general life, etc. Nearly 4 in 10 people suffer from back pain, and the whole range of things, including myths about back pain, such as moving will make my back pain worse. Presumably that's moving as in sort of from one place to another as opposed to moving house, etc. Avoiding exercise, no, that's not going to help. Scan will show you exactly what's wrong, and also that pain equals damage. So we're going to be talking a bit more about those myths from back pain with, as I say, an ex-commando, and he probably should know, I would have thought. Anybody in the Snart household suffer from back pain, or is it a case of, no, we're superheroes, why would we?
No, my dad does, actually, because of the job he has. He does a lot of, like, heavy lifting. He's a scaffolder, basically. And he's had, like, slipped discs and all that before, so he does suffer from it.
Yeah, oh, well, there we are. And on another piece that we're actually doing in the second part of the production, a 2016 integrity study commissioned by Quidco suggests that more than half of British people confess to keeping extra change handed over by a cashier. Millennials are the most likely to pocket those extra pennies. And some of the sort of shocks that have come out of this, 33% of folks surveyed haven't paid for a 5p carrier bag at the checkout, 23% have returned worn clothes for a refund, and 21% have lied on an insurance claim. This is again being raged against Continental Cousins, and it seems that Brits are too willing to break the rules to make every pound count. Have we basically sort of lost this whole routine? It seems that as a nation, our integrity isn't as intact as we thought. Are you shocked, Tessa?
I'm a little bit, especially on the 5p, well, sort of on the 5p bag. Obviously at TK Maxx, where there's a big sign on every single till saying you must sell a bag for 5p.
Well, exactly, it's the message that's sort of around to that 5p. And I'm sure other stores will probably follow if they already haven't.
Yeah.
To address this, we've got R. Paul Wilson, who is a world-renowned expert on cheating. He has obviously come from the real hustle, and indeed was also the host of Ultimate Tourist Scams, a writer, producer and film director, author of The Art of the Con, How to Think Like a Real Hustler and to Avoid Being Scammed. So you might want to tune in from Spain if you want to find out No, I won't go there. R. Paul Wilson, world-renowned expert on cheating and television presenter from The Real Hustle. Do you remember when we had Rivita, of course, who was the winner of one of our musical challenges a few weeks back, actually. Well, we're going over to Bombay, where it might even be warmer than the excitement of Costa Brava. So we'll be going out to Bombay too. Listen to Rivita's latest single. We also have the return of William Sitwell back from Zimbabwe, and as I mentioned, Arthur McKenzie. So that's great. But we know what the listener is actually keen to say. It's all this chitter chatter, all this content, what's coming up in the programme, and so on and so forth. But it's 7:08 in Britain, 9:07 in Spain, and a little bit later on, I think, in Bombay. We need to find out what Tessa is going to make of Camo's musical selection from Nashville. obviously last night when it was aired for the first time. A band that apparently have actually jumped straight into the charts at number 3 and have shocked and surprised a whole range of fine folk. And you may or may not have actually heard the wonderment of Casey Donahue. Strike a chord at all? No. This is Casey Donahue.
No, I haven't. I don't think I have.
Well, no. A whole new band. Who knows? You might actually want to actually feature them on Sound and Country Vision Volume 3 when that emerges. But meanwhile, this is Casey Donahue. Kiss me.
You kiss me. Waiting on you. Waiting on you. Waiting on you to kiss me. Waiting on you. Waiting on you. Waiting on you to kiss me.
Suggested last night it could be used as ideal cycling music, or in the case of William in Edinburgh, William Coles setting up a rickshaw up and down the Edinburgh climb. But what did you make of Casey Donahue and Kiss Me, Tessa?
Well, I think we'll definitely have to feature that one on.
I thought so. I had a feeling. Yeah. I would have laid odds on that particular, and I think I would have been absolutely right from that perspective. This evening, of course, we have a little extra special bonus, a little postcard from the Burley Horse Trials that took place last week, of course. Congratulations to Christopher Burton, Australian, who actually won the event this year. Andrew Nicholson from New Zealand came in second place, so good stuff from that perspective. I think it was somewhat overshadowed by other grand sporting events. And, of course, the big question that was being asked by a whole range of exhibitors, whether it was Peachy Belts, whether it was Ace Artist James Gillick, or whether indeed it was Charles from Dubarry, was, so where's Tessa Snart? I said, working diligently to all sorts of things, etc. But I gather that already the plans are setting are being put in motion for Tessa to do Burley in 2017. So good news.
Yes, I must go.
Well, there we are. End of August. I think August 31st and September 1st and 2nd. Or thereabouts. In a few moments, we'll be joined by Richard Fitzwilliams and a gentleman who actually used the term bewilderingly bad to actually address one of the movies that he was questioned about on BBC Radio 4 over the weekend. Bewilderingly bad, he said. Nonsense, no dignity, and widescreens just make a bad film twice as bad. I have a feeling that one of the movies that Richard is going to be reviewing for us is not going to score highly in terms of the Fitzwilliam scale, Tessa. You know, bewilderingly bad. It's traumatic.
He's a very good critic, though, isn't he? He's not really too biased all the time. I think he's quite a good,
Film critic. Exactly. So, you know, we obviously... Well, that's why he's on the show, you know, because clearly if he wasn't on that basis, we just wouldn't be there. So what will you be doing for the rest of the day? Now it's 13 minutes past 9 o'clock in Spain. Don't worry, in Lincoln it's still just 30 minutes past 8 o'clock, so you can relax and breathe. It's just time zones. What will you be doing? Will it be a case of, oh, I suppose I might sort of, you know, go for some paella, some calamari, what's the sort of format? Or will it be a case of, no, I'm going to be actually reading and prepping for the return to Lincoln in a couple of weeks' time?
Well, I have got to do that, but I've got to go down for breakfast first, and then we're all going to explore a different beach today because there's so many here and they're so beautiful with all their coves. So we found one yesterday, which is right near our hotel. So we're going to walk around and find another one today.
There you go. And of course, I do believe if you have one of those mobile devices, you could even listen to the rest of the show as you head through if you wish to. But, you know,
I can try. My only problem is I can't connect to the Wi-Fi here, so I'm just on whatever my phone connects me to. It's really slow here.
Exactly.
I can't even get on Facebook.
Lord above, you can't even see the celebratory triumph of three of your fellow Midric drivers. So it's outrageous.
Exactly. I've got it all to look forward to when I get back.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and you know, that's not to suggest that you shouldn't go to Spain just because you can't get internet access. And many people say that's exactly the reason why you should go. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's been quite hectic since we got here. We've actually had to move rooms. Getting organised.
Was there a reason for that, or did you just sort of have a random sort of thing of say, let's all move rooms now?
Yeah. We actually got here and it really wasn't nice, the part that we were putting in the hotel.
Oh, dear.
It was more like, you know, if you go on a group holiday, group, it was more like that, and it was quite loud. So we went downstairs, and they've moved us to another side of the resort, and it's a lot nicer, and we've got a better view from the balcony.
Well, so. You see, there we are. Which just makes the point that sometimes you just have to sort of address those issues and hopefully get some satisfaction as a result, etc. It's great stuff. Tessa, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us from Costa Brava in Spain today?
I have. It was great to connect.
Well, Bruce, exactly. So will you be back with us next week telephonically? I mean, it's the week after, I think, we make your return, and we'll see you back in the studio. Who knows who will return? I mean, as you may have gathered this morning, it's a case of just you, me and the listener, which is probably enough, really. You know, it's always good.
Or did Eva not make it today?
I think Eva has actually been abducted by aliens. I mean, I have not heard diddly about, you know, who knows. I'm sure she's working well and thriving. Anyway, she may turn up in the second hour. It's all part and parcel of the rich tapestry of life. End of the day, Tessa Snart will return. Yay! Tuned in to the Midweek Drive last night, you will have heard our little quiz that we hosted with Phil Leonis in particular in Los Angeles, asking him what movie could possibly be referred to by Richard Fitzwilliams as bewilderingly bad, nonsense, having no dignity, and in the words of Samuel Goldwyn, widescreens just make a bad film twice as bad. Phil's response, well, you could choose so many this year. We even mentioned Morgan Freeman. I just don't know, maybe 3 or 4 days after his glorious appearance on that wonderful Radio 4 Sunday programme, maybe he might have actually avoided bewilderingly bad and it's become amazingly awesome. But maybe not. Richard Fitzwilliams, are we having a hurtful time, or is it just a case of it's been and gone?
Well, I can only say it's just awful, and it's best avoided.
Oh, no! I mean, we are, of course, referring to Ben-Hur, Judah Ben-Hur, which was hopefully about to set a whole new standard for sword and sandal and biblical epics for the 21st century to accompany, obviously, the work of Mel Gibson and others from that point of view. But it looks as though the chariot race... And I thought you were even criticising the clothing, Richard. You even went to criticise... You say, the clothing wasn't authentic. You were merciless.
I thought that there was a particular T-shirt... tunic, of course, and Jacques Houston was wearing as Ben-Hur, which... could be quite useful to Brighton at the moment. You know, the beaches, if you could get with all this rail problem. I mean, the point is, frankly, merciless, yes, but I'd look forward to it and I'd hoped it would be good. I heard in America that nearly 80% of reviewers thought it was awful, and nonetheless, I hadn't seen it, and when I saw it, you frankly realise that Timo Beckmann-Bettel simply doesn't understand the period, and the screenwriters, they... haven't a clue. So you've got Jack Houston as Ben-Hur. Well, obviously, it's a movie about sibling rivalry. Although, I do have to say, the twist here is that Messala, played by Toby Kebbell, is a Roman orphan brought up in the wealthy home of the Ben-Hur family. It's at the time of the Christ, the time of Pontius Pilate was governor. The trouble is, the characters do the weirdest and silliest things. They do wear odd, for example, Morgan Freeman's wig is just unutterably silly. The most bizarre portrayal.
I thought he looked like a bit of a Rasta person. You know, he's obviously sort of challenging that whole sort of Rasta impact on the whole thing. Did you?
Well, the problem is that he was given a script which made absolutely no sense at all. I mean, even after the, as I said in the broadcast, after the galley battle, he happens to drift to some safety on land, wakes up in a tent, there's Morgan Freeman and there are the horses. I mean, that's a bit of luck, isn't it? I mean, the point is that none of this film is likely to have happened. The point is, this character of Messala, Well, he's supposed to have been given a slightly more human twist, but the trouble is Ben-Hur deserved punishment. I'm sorry to say this, but instead of that famous tile hitting the new governor, what happens here is that a zealot, the zealots are out of Monty Python, by the way, probably...
Listen, on the positive side, Richard, does it make you reappraise the excellent and awesome acting of Christopher Hemsworth and indeed possibly even go back to the man from Uncle's, Guy Ritchie's incarnation, and say, well, they're classics by comparison?
You could certainly say that by comparison you would prefer to see them, because frankly, I mean, watching this, and I say watching it, the preview, this is not advisable. Popcorn was left on every single seat.
Oh, now, dear.
People come and go.
Messy eaters, obviously.
Some people start their
snacks. Exactly.
I mean, the first half hour, I had to go, shh.
Oh, dear Lord.
I don't normally at a critic's preview. In fact, never before. But, I mean, all of this is peripheral to the main fact that
It doesn't sound good, Richard. And I have to say, I didn't feel it was going to be good. I also have very little hope or indeed optimism to look forward to the remake of The Magnificent Seven. I think that's going to be challenging as well, but that's different.
Yes, it's very soon on us. I mean, here there was one scene, the galley battle, which was filmed from the point of view of a galley slave. So you see what Ben-Hur sees, and that was extremely good. And there were scenes in the chariot race, some of the visuals. But if you think in the 1925 silent movie with Raymond Navarro and Francis X. Bushman, what you had was 42 cameras who recorded this. This is the movie that put MGM firmly as a status symbol, as one of the top Hollywood studios. This was the first serious epic in 1959 with Charlton Heston. We all know that that was superb.
And a remake of the Cecil B. DeMille 1920s version, but you know, Cafe Society, did that actually cleanse the palates? Did it actually remove the taste?
Yes, very well indeed. I mean, the thing is that it is not one of Woody Allen's finest movies. I mean, recently we've had Irrational Man, we've had Midnight in Paris. I mean, it's a wonderful time to see a Woody Allen movie if you're an admirer, and this is extremely enjoyable. You're set in the late 30s in Hollywood and Manhattan, a satirical but loving look at the film industry, and also those superficial but very glamorous glitterati with a hint of notoriety around who merit this sobriquet of so-called cafe society. I mean, it's got an absorbing love triangle, and Kristen Stewart is the joy of this movie. I mean, I have to say, I fell for her in Clouds of Sils Maria with Juliette Binoche.
And not Twilight. You astound me.
I have to say that she is enchanting. In this Twilight, I saw but one of them. Yes, I suppose. I mean, depends how you like your vampires. And here we follow Bobby Dorfman, played by Jesse Eisenberg, and he's the initially very, very neurotic and angst-ridden character, who, of course, used to be played by Allen, and Woody Allen is the narrator. Bobby arrives in Hollywood seeking work for his uncle Phil, who runs one of its top casting agencies, and Phil very unwisely tells his gorgeous secretary, Bonnie, played by Kristen Stewart, to show Bobby the sights. Well, since they fall in love, it proves very unwise, because Phil's own plans are to leave his wife of 25 years and marry Bonnie, because they too love each other, and of course she's attracted by his status. So Bobby, in a disillusioned, returns to New York. His gangster brother, not a particularly well-written character, Ben, employs him in his new nightclub, and that becomes all the rage, and you can just imagine who, after a certain time, he meets there. He's married with Veronica as his wife, played by Blake Lively. He's a father, and he's still in love with Bonnie and Phil turn up at the club. But I have to say, it's an uneven movie. I mean, people have made a point that the dysfunctional Jewish family is really rather overdoing it, and obviously it's a movie obsessed with surface, but my goodness, you get veteran cameraman Vittorio Storaro, who captures some of the gorgeous visuals. I mean, the Art Deco backgrounds and so forth. They are fantastic. The costumes, all of that. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. I mean, it's a very, very enjoyable film on a certain level. Not one of Allen's finest movies, but Jesse Eisenberg, quite at home, a bit over the part to begin with. with a rather embarrassing scene where he phones for a hooker, not one of Adam's finest, as I say. But, I mean, you do find a lot to enjoy, and it's a love triangle with Harp because Steve Carell's extremely good, and so is Jesse Eisenberg, but Kristen Stewart is absolutely enchanting. With real appeal.
Well,
yeah.
There we are. Just as well she didn't actually head off to do Ben-Hur. Anyway, there we are.
Terrible. There are the women's parts in Ben-Hur. Dear, it's frightful. But, I mean, you know, you shoot something in 3D, it's irrelevant. You have a final song. You haven't got...
Oh, if it's in 3D, it must be wonderful then, clearly. I mean, the chariot race in 3D must be fantastic, you know, with or without popcorn.
Yes, and I mean, then you have a character, Morgan Freeman's Sheikh Ibrahim, actually tells Ben-Hur how to handle his chariot. Now, I thought there was a lot of noise going on, but they must have some subtle way of communicating that I simply didn't realise. There's a final song.
Telepathy, Richard, telepathy.
Telepathy. Well, if Charlton Heston was alive, in his grave.
I'm not sure whether that makes any logical or grammatical sense, really. If Charlton Heston was alive, he'd be spinning in his grave. Never mind. Step away from that whole process. A thumbs down for Ben-Hur in the Roman centurion sense, or indeed Roman emperor sense, and sort of thumbs up for Cafe Society. Richard, more or less has to sort of wrap up today, because again, it's another one of those packed programmes, because we need to head up to Tyneside, then we're sorting about back pain, then we've got Rivita in Bombay. Yes, I've said that again, Rivita in Bombay. She's the singer. And a whole heap of other things. So have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today, Richard Fitzwilliams?
Yes, I certainly have.
Excellent. And will you be returning next week with more goodness and wonderment? And who knows, by then, another week's gone by, people might have actually listened to the Sunday show on the iPlayer, BBC Radio 4. Just type in Richard Fitzwilliams. It's a lot easier than trying to track down the actual show itself. You'll get all sorts of things coming through with that. Or you can listen to extensive Richard Fitzwilliams podcasts, courtesy of your very own Siren FM and SoundsideBroadcasting.podbean.com.
Should avoid Ben-Hur's. They have been in America where it's been called suicide.
Well, no, that's Suicide Squad. That's a different movie entirely. Anyway, so it goes.
Presidents
may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive
and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition
remains.
That's Lily Holloman affecting an accent.
I wonder if Lily Holloman could probably do a Geordie accent. Maybe Phil Lynas, we could actually ask them. I'm sure they'd actually make a fine attempt, Ian Lennox, to actually connect with your wonderment and joy. Welcome on this 2nd September Midweek Drive Morning Edition, Thursday, September the 8th, 2016. And the question to your good self, Ian, is, have you ever suffered back pain?
Yes, I have.
Oh, well.
Long people generally do, you know.
You will be fascinated by our next correspondent, who is ex-commando Uzo Ehiogu. And Uzo will be talking about the myths that we often have with respect to back pain. Apparently, there are four top myths when it comes to back pain, and you might want to confirm or deny this particular aspect. First of all, moving will make my back pain worse.
No, I don't think that.
Mm-hmm. You should avoid exercise, especially weight training.
I don't know about that. I've never done any weight training.
That's another myth. A scan will show me exactly what's wrong. That's another myth.
Well, we'd hope so, but I gather it won't.
Yeah, and pain equals damage.
Well, pain's the body's way of telling you there's something
wrong.
Well,
you see, this is... Yeah, well, who knows what Uzo will actually say about that. But he is an ex-commando, right. So we'll find out in a matter of moments. Ian, what's the weather like in Newcastle-upon-Tyne this wonderful
day? At the moment, it's sunny. Yeah. And it's been warm, very warm for the last few days. Mm-hmm. Even when it hasn't been sunny.
It's been humid, hasn't it? Kind of flustered.
Yeah, but it's been quite pleasant in many ways, actually. I've got my hammock out. I've done some reading.
Nice.
So.
You see, that with back pain could well be connected. You see, hammocks, back pain, hammocks. Could be
is this your theory or is it a scientific
No, one? I'm just sort of suggesting it could be if it's not put together in an effective way, who knows what damage to the spinal cord a badly hooked hammock could actually provide.
Well, it's the hammock provides a constant pressure on the whole area of the back, so I imagine it'd be all right.
All right, okay. Well,
I think the danger of a hammock is behind your knees, actually, because you can't rest the back of your knees. And what I do is I put a cushion under my knees when I lie on the back. People generally lie in the back of the hammock, you know. On their backs on the hammock.
And you've been reading Robert Harris, I believe, on your hammock.
Yes, I have. He's one of my favourite authors.
Yeah, almost alternate history. What would have happened if things went a different way, really, perhaps, as far as Robert Harris is concerned? What is it about Robert Harris that strikes you as, you know, particularly resonant with yourself, Ian?
Well, his historical books are brilliant research. He really knows his stuff. And the one I'm reading about Cicero, I've only read 20-odd pages, but it's just fascinating.
Probably more illuminating about Roman times than the movie Ben-Hur, according to Richard Fitzwilliams. I still find that line bewilderingly bad. It's very good. I mean, it's alliterative, and it also sort of really gets to the nub of the matter. Bewilderingly bad.
Who's this? Ben-Hur?
The movie.
The Charlton Heston one. It's based on the Charlton Heston movie, I believe.
And that's based on the 1920s movie by Cecil B. DeMille.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's best not to talk about it. Hopefully we will be speaking with Arthur McKenzie about sporting matters, because Arthur last week, although we trailed ahead, didn't turn up. He sent me a very apologetic email, but things had cropped up, etc. I mean, bear in mind that Arthur McKenzie will be coming off the bench to step into this slot whilst you take a brief time out from the Madrid Drive Morning Edition.
Oh, right, yeah.
You know, it's very critical that he kind of lives up to the standard and so on. Ian, we've had lots of sporting activities. We've had your tennis, we've had the launch of the Paralympics, but we've also had a fantastic success for the home nations in which Sam Allardyce's heroes managed to demolish the awesomeness that was, of course, the Slovakia people by 1-0 in the 95th minute, scored by Adam Lallana. Did you get off your chair and jump for joy?
Not particularly, no. I personally believe that there are four... It's basically the Football Association make money themselves by having all these World Cup competitions. But what's invariably happening is England are playing against teams... I couldn't name a single player on the other side. Often, sometimes I'm not even sure where the country is, and the actual spectacle of an international match, which is always, they're invariably on television, of course, is A, one-sided, B, one team defending like mad against a superior opposition, and it's compared with the club championships, the Champions League and things like that. It's just a second-rate competition for most of the time. When you start getting Italy, England playing Brazil, England Italy, or England Germany, that sort of stuff, it's good.
Are you suggesting that Scotland's fantastic 5-1 defeat of Malta is not necessarily a result that should have, you know, people in Berlin and Munich and Paris and Rio de Janeiro sort of trembling in their bootstraps?
Well, the fact is, they weren't trembling in their bootstraps, were they? They were probably sleeping in their beds, I would imagine. Dear. I don't know. Or sleeping on their armchairs. But it's just... to me, it's become boring. And when I was a boy or a young lad, a lot of international matches that England played were against major sides where there was a real danger in getting beaten. And I'm sick to death of people telling me there's no such thing as an easy game now if these teams are very well organised.
Exactly.
I mean, Malta, I haven't seen them play, so I'm talking off the top of my head here, but they wouldn't last in the championship.
You don't know, Ian. You don't know. Look at Leicester
City. Well, I'd love to put it to the test, and I'll bet you.
Well, talking about tests, new Football Association chairman Greg Clark has decided and derided that the countdown clock to the 2022 World Cup that his predecessor, Greg Dyke, had installed is a joke. The clock was erected at England's training base in Staffordshire after Dyke set the national team the target of winning the World Cup in Qatar. But Greg Clark yesterday suggested time might be up for the clock. Yes.
Right.
So it's different.
Well,
I know that the clock is still ticking in the Ian Lennox household, and that's always critical as we actually head towards the Ian Lennox critical audio review of matters. We don't even have time to actually squeeze in a John Wenham event sort of piece at this particular moment. We're saving that for Arthur in the second part of the production. But we will be offering you the winner of last night's musical challenge that we actually had. We could have gone for Men in the Sky. We could have gone for In My Little Corner of the Earth. But in the end, we went for As the Crow Flies by Sean Kelly. Are you happy and ready to listen to Sean Kelly with As the Crow Flies?
Gotta slow me down. Except I'm rolling through. I've been too long out of town. Scattered the fields of plan. No more chasing tails or staring at the skies. Straight as a die. And as the crow flies.
And as the crow flies from Lincoln to Newcastle, Newcastle-Lincoln, I don't know, probably about 200 miles or thereabouts. What did you make of Sean Kelly and the return presence with As the Crow Flies?
I quite liked it. It seemed to be quite well arranged of the music of its type. And,
So it wasn't bewilderingly bad then?
Oh, God, no.
No, well, that's all right, then. It's just an important side of things. It was to maintain our quality side of things there.
Yeah. I mean to say something like that's about 7 out of 10 for everybody, isn't it?
Really? Nice, very good.
Mr. Grumpy speaks.
Indeed. Well, in an integrity study commissioned by Quidquo, which we'll be talking about in about half an hour or so from now, a study rated the United Kingdom, or Britain, against our continental cousins in Europe. We didn't do too well. Apparently, Britain has topped the list as the worst offenders in Europe for pocketing small change. The French think they have the most integrity, with 92% of those polled considering themselves squeaky clean, and 86% of Germans believing that they are honest. Meanwhile, in Britain, as we found, 33% haven't paid for a 5p carrier bag at the checkout.
Really?
Yeah.
How do they do that?
They just
don't. Put on the billet.
Mini acts of dishonesty all adding up, and it seems that as a nation, our integrity isn't as intact as we thought.
Right. Karl Marx said of the Germans, he said if they start the revolution at a railway station, they'd all buy platform tickets.
Yeah.
And they do actually tend to obey traffic signals and pedestrian signals more than we do, I think.
Well.
I don't know what that's relevant to, but really, that's what I just pointed out.
In Rome, perhaps, in which case the...
The anarchy.
Well, yeah. I know that could be a gross oversimplification of road traffic situation around the Vatican at this particular time of day, but,
when I lived in France, when I came back, I wrote an article on the for my local newspaper saying that I believed that the reason the French were so good at rugby was that every busque was like a scrum. And they're constantly practicing their rugby, really, instead of queuing like ordinary people did. And anyway, I thought it was extremely funny at the time. No one else did.
Perceptive as ever, Ian, and the kind of writing and incisive wit that means we guarantee to invite you back in 3 weeks from now. But we need 2 weeks just to recover from that particular aspect. So the bottom line is, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Yes, I have indeed,
Ian Lennox?
Yes.
And will you return at the end of, let's say we're in the month of September, so it would be at the end of September.
Yes, it is.
You'll be back.
With pleasure.
Splendid. Yeah. The Jackson 5, and I want you back. I've got your back. All sorts of things. I suspect we might still be just waiting for the system to connect us to Uzo Ehiogo. Uzo, are you actually there? No. We're getting our little whole system from that perspective as we wait for ex-commander Uzo Ehiogo to actually join us to talk about back pain and various other factors as well. Whilst we're actually waiting for the delights of this, let's keep the back theme going. As Arnold Schwarzenegger said, not so much I'll be back as ooh, we back. No, don't look back in anger, and enough already with the back puns. We now can guarantee we can speak to ex-commander Uzo Ehiogo, legendary ex-commander Uzo Ehiogo, to talk about some of the myths relating to back pain. Good morning, Uzo.
Good morning, Alex. Hi.
Excellent. Very good. Well, yeah, I'm glad you're reconnected, because, I mean, otherwise we would be going through my boyfriend's back, holler back, girl. We could always come back to you. The listener would say, enough already. We've been speaking to some of our folk already this morning about some of these myths that have come out of this recent survey that suggests that what can actually sort through back pain. And it's fair to say that the one that surprised most people as being a myth was that pain equals damage.
Yeah, that's right. Pain doesn't equal damage at all, actually. You know, there's many reasons why you can have pain associated with back pain, but essentially pain doesn't equal damage, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, this survey of over 2,000 people by Opnium for the Chartered Society of Physiotherapy really gets to the point of how deep-rooted the fear of movement has actually become. And it is one of those things where back pain... It's a bit like saying you've got man flu sometimes. Say, oh yeah, fine, you've got back pain, etc. But there's a whole range of things that tap into place with that. And I was also fascinated by the notion that you should avoid exercise, especially weight training. No, that's another one of those myths, isn't it? You know, don't avoid exercise. You probably need to keep moving to keep your back sort of in working order.
No, you too. And, you know, we often say that motion is lotion and exercise is medicine. And that's really true. Because look, you know, if you have, your first episode of low back pain, most people avoid activity and they avoid exercise, for fear of making the pain worse. But actually, what we know and what current research is telling us, well, is that exercise can actually reduce pain and exercise can modulate pain. Because when you exercise, your body produces various chemicals such as, serotonin and various different opioids, but essentially exercise can actually reduce pain, and probably more importantly, if your tissues and your body is designed to move. So if you're not moving, say for example, and you're taken to your bed, then essentially what you're doing is you're deconditioning yourself, so you'll lose strength in all of your tissues, your muscles, your tendons, your ligaments, and so on. And they're really important for supporting your body. So, exercising is actually very, very important.
Uzo, we live in a very sedentary society in which many of us actually spend a lot of time. I mean, even as I speak now, I'm sitting down at a control desk and I'll be going off to do various other things from that perspective. We've heard recently that that's probably the quickest way to a short lifespan in terms of that sedentary sort of routine. Yeah. So is it important to literally just take time to walk around, move, just keep moving, literally?
Yeah, it is. And it's often said that if you don't make time for exercise, then, you know, one day you'll have to make time for illness. Well, you know, the research, again, has supported that, and that was an ancient Chinese proverb. So I think, look, you know, the most important thing is to try and be as active as you possibly can. It doesn't have to be exercise, you know, structured exercise. It's better if it is, but actually, even just physical activity, you know, taking the stairs rather than taking the lift or the escalator, that is physical activity, especially if you don't do very much. Then that in itself can actually, you know, produce a training effect, for want of a better phrase.
And looking at that, I can almost guarantee that there'll be one or two people who are listening to this saying, oh, well, it's all very well for Uzo. He's an ex-commando, for God's sakes. You know, he went through that whole process. Yeah. Is it very much a case of, look, you work through gentle exercise, just you know, no matter what age you happen to be, it's important to sort of keep going, whether it's a case of weight training, twisting, running aerobics, you know, start off sort of slowly and build from there?
It is. It is important. It is important. And it's all relative. It's all relative, you know. So we all start at different places along the exercise spectrum. And for some people, if you're not doing very much, then actually, you know, going out for a walk, you know, during your lunch break is probably going to be enough, as opposed to sitting at your desk and having your lunch. But then, you know, for others, you know, they may want to take part in more physically demanding exercise. I think the key message is, you know, exercise is medicine. So doing something, even if it's not structured formal exercise, is going to be beneficial, you know, for your whole self, not just your back, not just your heart, but also for your psychology as well. You know, there's a lot of research around the benefits of exercise and improving mental health, you know. So, you know, there's a big push for exercise.
Uzo, there'll be folk who are listening to this and have already been inspired to say, let's move on. And that's part of the campaign, as we said, for the Chartered Society of Physiotherapy, to really address not only the myths of back pain and so on, but also sort of address some of those key things. What are the kind of places people can go to for more info, either from yourself or indeed from the Chartered Society of Physiotherapy?
Yeah, so we have a website. Our website is www.csp.org.uk. /MythBusters.
Splendid.
And they can find out loads of information around MythBusters and dispelling the myths around low back pain, but equally so as well, our website is really a rich resource of information about exercise and also about physiotherapists as well.
Uzo, it was worth waiting for the Muzak that we actually had on call waiting whilst you were dealing with another station, just to get some of that fantastic information across. Two final questions for your good self. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today, Uzo?
Sorry, say that again.
Has it been okay for you? Has it been painful? Has
it been okay?
It's been great. That's all right. Well,
it's been great. Thank you.
So can we look forward to connecting with you again in the very near future and keep us appraised of how we can maintain our quality of life and, of course, avoid those back pain scenarios? Will you return?
It would be an absolute pleasure.
Yay!
It'd be an absolute pleasure.
Help to